This is the GNSO working group session. It is October 11th, 2014. We are in Constellation Room. This session will last from 1630 to 1800. We will be discussing GNSO PDP, SSAC, TNT, P&I.
Okay, everyone, let's prepare for the last session of the day. Yeah.
You want the ASIC after this?
Yes, then yes, exactly. So,
can okay. No, no, just, I'm not going to move the ASIC down. We're just going to have a
session. GNSO, PDP, SSAC, TNT.
Pardon?
Yeah, yeah, we're all
right. P&I.
I'm going to leave at 5. I've got to go and meet with Carissa and Byron at 5. So, and I'm going to come to the lobby at 6:30. And I'm thinking, are you going to walk? Are you the?
I'm debating walking, leaving the pack, or driving ahead and getting
I'm sure one way or another we'll get there. All right, everyone. Can we start the afternoon session, please? So there's a slight change to the agenda, just to let you know. We're going to reorder these items. We were going to go into the GNSO PDP improvements. Now we will instead swap that until 17:15, quarter past 5, and bring forward the translation and transliteration of contact information PDP, which I believe Rudy here is going to give us an update on. I think it's relatively brief, but let me hand over to you, Rudy, and we'll pick up with that. Are we good to go with the recording? Thank you. So it's the translation and transliteration of contact information PDP working group presented to you by Rudy Vansnick. Overhead, Rudy.
Thank you, Jonathan. I have to excuse Chris Dillon, who is co-chairing this working group with me and is doing quite a lot of work, impressive work in drafting documents. We can go to the next slide. Maybe it's good to refresh our memory and have a look at what is the task of this working group. In fact, we had two questions on the table. The first one is whether it is desirable to translate contact information to a single common language or transliterate contact information to a single common script. The second question is who should decide who should bear the burden translating contact information to a single common language or transliterating contact information to a single common script? Those two questions, when we were drafting the charter, we have been trying to add a few other questions to those two, and that are, what are the benefits of transformation, translation or transliteration, in light of potential cost? Should transformation be mandatory in all GTLDs? And the last question we have been adding to it is, should transformation be mandatory for all registrants or only those based in certain countries and or using specific non-ASCII scripts? When we started in January working on these questions, we started sending out questions to the SOs and ACs and other stakeholder groups, and we obtained a lot of information back from them, and especially from, for example, in countries that are affected by having non-US or non-ASCII scripts. So the recent developments are, after we have been handling the inputs from the different SOs and ACs, we also looked into the feasibility study that has been published, where it shows that there is no responding registrar or registry is currently transforming registrant data, which is important to know, and provisioning and querying protocols are lacking either support or deployment for internationalized registration data, and that none of the tools tested is providing a high level of accuracy and consistency in its transformation of internationalized registration data. And recently, we started after London, drafting a strawman proposal, and that is actually in a status where we are at the end of the discussion and going to the phase where we want to obtain a clear consensus among the members of the working group. So the next steps, we have our face-to-face meeting on Monday, 3 o'clock in the afternoon, where we will discuss the option of either recommending for or against mandatory transformation of contact information. That's the point we are. We need to know if it's a yes or no. We will publish an initial report shortly after the ICANN 51 meeting. That's work to be done in the next weeks. And the goal is to have the final report published for the ICANN 52 meeting. This is a bit after the plan we had to have this final report in December. That was what we tried to have accomplished, but it looks like we need a bit more time to get this done. For those who want to have more information on the working group and the charter, you can find the URLs on the slides. I think that's what I have to tell you about the status today, and I'm open for questions and eventually input from other participants in the working group. I see Peter being present also. The weekly calls have been very extensively participated by a lot of people, and I'm quite happy that there is very interesting input coming each call we have from each member of the group, and we have a good representation of the different stakeholder groups in the working group. That's, I think, important to know. So I'm ending up here my report and open for questions.
Thanks, Rudy. It's you can leave up the recommendations. I don't know if there's Lars, if you wouldn't. Yeah, I mean, just the last slide there is next steps and more information. Any questions or comments? I mean, that's have you a sense of where this is going to go in terms of? I mean, I know you probably don't want to preempt it. You said discuss the option of either recommending for or against mandatory transformation. Seems like a pretty big deal. I don't know how the registrars or others feel about this. I mean, seems like a potentially big.
Well, looking into the question itself, transformation, translation, or transliteration has an impact and will cost money. And that's, I think, one of the big questions that has to be solved. Who is going to pay for that? We know that from law enforcement, it is something they would say, okay, it's mandatory anyway. We need that. But otherwise, if we look into the aspect of the new design, the new directory design that is also on the table, up till today, we didn't see any structure allowing to have different languages for contact information in that structure. So I think it's already something that has to be triggered to that group to schedule a modification in the data model in order to allow to have more than one language. And that's where our decision saying that it is mandatory or not mandatory impacts also the work to be done in defining the data model for the directory services. So I think it's quite important that we have a broad scope on what the mission is in itself, impacting not only the registrars, not only the registries, but everybody around.
Okay, I've got I've got a queue. I've got James here, and then to Alan and Petter.
So thank you for the update, and I think we have one registrar participating and giving updates. And I got to tell you, registrars are fairly concerned about the direction that this group is going down because it seems like it's accumulating a wish list of multilingual omniscience, and then kicking the responsibility for making that a reality to commercial and contracted parties, and then, of course, onto the registrants. So I have a question for a scenario, and perhaps it's something you've discussed in your working group. Could a, for example, Chinese law enforcement agency request that all existing domain names be translated from English to Chinese?
Of course they can request. The answer is it the task of the registrar or the registry to do that? I don't think so. There is no contract engaging you in doing translation or transliteration of contact information today, because there is no space for it.
Understood. I'm thinking that, like, for example, I think that when we approach some of these issues, we usually approach them as from the perspective of, let's say, U.S. or English-speaking law enforcement or intellectual property. I can't understand the language of this whois contact, and I need it translated. But presumably, any policy recommendations resulting from this group would not be biased towards any one language pair set. It would be any requester in any language requesting immediate translation to any other language. And I think that's where we kind of throw up our hands and say, solve that in the real world first, and then we'll be glad to put it in whois.
But maybe to add to that is that in the discussions we had, it is clear that it is directed most often by countries where there is no ASCII script used for registering domain names. And it makes it difficult to get, for instance, the address of a Chinese company that registered its domain name. If that is written in Chinese, it's not easy to see if you check up the address, if it's really the good address. So that's one of the issues. But Lars, want to add something?
Thank you, Rudy. Lars Hoffman for the transcript. Just very briefly, to James's point, so I'd just like to point out that the group is very aware that and it's also part of the larger charter questions, that its task is also to assess the benefits and the costs that are associated with potential mandatory translation and transliteration. So it's not something that there is a list been drawn up and just do we think it's a good or a bad idea, yes or no, let's go that way. So people on the group are aware of this. They understand that also transliteration doesn't necessarily mean just from one language into ASCII's. It could also potentially then mean, you know, why not from Russian into Chinese? So these are all issues that are being considered and that obviously would also increase or make things, increase the issues that need to be considered in order to make a final confirmation on which way to go. And I think once there is an outcome of the group, at the moment there's different opinions on which costs outweigh which benefits, and I think that's where we're trying to work on to get a consensus from everybody that there's a solution being reached. But it's not that there's a list been drawn up and nobody thinks about what the implications might or might not be for the contracted parties.
All right, I've got a queue with Stephanie Allen and Petter in it. So, Stephanie.
Thanks very much, Stephanie Perrin, for the record. And I just wondered, Rudy, you mentioned that law enforcement, for them, it was a mandatory. They wanted this. Did they give you any other examples where their costs of transliteration and translation were being borne by the investigated parties?
Well, to be clear, officially we didn't get any request from law enforcement. It's because we have been consulting during the ICANN meetings, the physical meetings in London. We had a session where we had the chance to talk to them. But it's clear that they are requesting this to be done so that, in fact, they don't have to do the work themselves. However, the complexity of this issue makes that there is no perfect solution. Actually, there is no translation or transliteration tool that enables to produce correct translation. And that is already an issue. If you say, okay, it's mandatory, you need also to provide some ideas about solutions. And I think that from the law enforcement side, they have also the struggle to find a way of doing this in a cost-effective way. And it's something that in the group we have been looking into the issue of are there solutions available today that allow us to give it a good direction of should it be mandatory as or no? And that's where the group is a bit pushing from one side to the other, depending on what we discuss in essence, in how certain groups are willing to have this being done. And actually, it's well, for me, it's a terrific experience to see. The longer you're on the discussions, the more you see complexity growing in an issue that, in fact, affects everybody. And the question is, who should take care of the cost of doing all this work? And actually, personally, I don't have any answer to that question.
Okay, Alan, you've been patient.
Thank you. A question first, and then maybe a comment. My recollection is this PDP is presuming that the WHOIS database is already capable of representing the native language in which the domain was registered. So if it's Chinese, then it can hold Chinese. We're not in the 7-bit ASCII world. So really, we're saying, should there be a translation, not so that the RAA can be satisfied, that is, and represent the true address, but translated or transliterated into yet another language other than the one in which the registrant originally used. Okay, and I don't see how one can go forward answering that unless you specify what language. We're not going to translate everything into every known language. So I'm not quite sure what the target is.
Well, to answer directly to that question, it would be in another script. We are not saying that it's going to be in several other scripts. That's clear. Even today, data model doesn't allow you to have several scripts, several languages used for the contact information. You're limited to one. You cannot say that the address, one is in English, the other one in Chinese, the other one in Russian. No, there is only one address information in the contact information. So if you look into how we have been addressing the issue, it was from the one language into another one, not in several other ones. But maybe, Lars, you can add something to?
Yeah, go ahead, Lars. I'm conscious there's a queue just to let you know who's waiting to talk. It's Petter. I've got Emma remotely and Edmund up at the microphone here.
Yeah, just very quickly to Alan's point. So the charter says that the group should consider whether contact information should be translated or transliterated into one common script. And so the group, obviously, the general assumption of people in this room and in this community will go from, you know, should, for example, Chinese script be translated into ASCII. But what the group is obviously conscious of is, why should it be ASCII? And if it is English, yes, English for, well, sure. But so the point being is that it should be one script, and then the reason is, if it is just one script that it be translated to, why should it be English and not something else, for example? It's a very concentric point of view, right? The FBI would like to see it in ASCII, I'm sure, whereas the KGB or whatever they're called now would probably like to see it in Russian. And so it's, I'm just saying, is that the group is aware that you could open a Pandora's box as well if you translate and transliterate into different languages.
Could I have a follow-on, Jonathan?
Yeah, just if you could be brief, because I'm conscious
I'll be
of others
very
waiting.
Brief.
Alan, go ahead.
Yeah, I'll be very brief. So if the issue is a domain is registered in Chinese, and we're now asking, should we transliterate it or translate it to something else for representation in the WHOIS database, in today's world, we're actually saying, should we make it less accurate? That seems to be counter to where the way we were supposed to be going.
Okay, I see Rudy nodding there with some concern in a similar way. I've got Petter, then Amma, then Edmund, then James. Petter, go ahead.
Thanks. Petter Infort, IPC. First of all, I would like to thank to co-chairs for the great work that you're doing, because this is obviously not a very simple topic to work on. As we have seen, it's difficult to find a solution. What we have said from the IPC point of view is that we think it's important to have a readable basic and that system should be mandatory. From the pure legal aspect, of course, the original contact information will have the first instance. But to get a possibility actually to read who is and to get some initial contact information, we think that's very important, and that should be mandatory. And finally, as we discussed previously here, the representation and participation from GAC members, this is actually one of the groups where we have got good feedback from GAC members. So that's a very good example of that. Thanks.
Thanks, Petter. Amma has been patient online. Amma, see if we can hear you come in.
Thanks, Jonathan. This is Amar. Can you hear me?
Yeah, nice and clearly. Thanks, Amar.
All right, thanks. I'm sorry I couldn't be there in person. But I just wanted to perhaps chime in with a few comments in response to some of the questions and concerns that have been raised right now by James and Alan. I think James's point is well taken regarding what if, for example, the Chinese government asked that all the Whois databases transformed, which is the word being used for translation and transliteration, into Chinese language. And Alan's question on whether does it make sense to make this decision on whether it is desirable or not if we don't determine what language it's going to be transformed into. Well, for the first issue, The charter, as Lars made clear earlier, the charter question is really on whether it's desirable to translate and or transliterate into a single common script. So it wouldn't be a case where whether this PDP passed like a recommendation that yes, it is desirable, then you would have transliteration to any language and script that when one stakeholder asked for it. But it would be a sort of a uniform transformation into one single common script by when registration data is in the form of other scripts. Regarding the issue of how can we make the decision if we don't consider what language it is, well, this is actually a problem that we faced back when we were drafting the charter of this working group, and it wasn't something that was included in the issue report leading up to that, and it did come up very early on. We wanted to sort of discuss what language and script we were talking about, but it was something that was made clear that would be handled by a different PDP, perhaps the post-expert working group PDP, and I should probably also mention that there's another expert working group on internationalized registration data that is also ongoing right now, and the two working groups are communicating and coordinating. We are trying to consider a lot of these complexities, as Rudy has mentioned, on this working group. There are a lot of them, and a lot of them are actually linguistic complexities. So when we say about if we're translating and or transliterating contact information, if we're actually making the Whois database less accurate or not, that is a very real concern. And it's linguistically, after exploring several different languages and scripts, it is proving to be very challenging. And the idea is that the original language and script that the contact information is provided in will probably remain to be the authoritative set of contact information and not the alternative set, which is in the transliterated and translated script and language. I hope that clarifies a few things, but I also wanted to raise another point that is of specific concern to the council, and that is that if I'm not mistaken, and please correct me if I am wrong, but I think Ching, who is the GNSO council liaison to this PGP, is going to be an outgoing councillor at the end of this meeting, and so the GNSO council does need to appoint a new liaison, and I am on this working group, and so is Yoav, I believe, so should probably get that on the council agenda at some point. Thanks.
Thanks, Sama. Nice to have you with us. Steve, you got that? Right, so that's we'll need to appoint a new liaison to this working group. I just want to check before we go to you, Edmund. Jim, you've arrived. Are we waiting for Patrick as well as part of the SAC? Or are you on? Oh, I see. You guys slipped in so quietly into the back that I wasn't even sure you were there. All right, so we'll try and bring this to a close with the next two comments from Edmund and James, and then we'll be done with this session.
Okay. Thank you. Edmund Chung here. So I just want to make sure, I apologize, I missed the beginning of the presentation, so this might have already been covered, but I understand the what James was mentioning and others in terms of the anxiety of how this is done and what the costs are and those kind of things. This is kind of a reason why I think there was a group before that looked into this called the IRD before, and we kind of punted this into the PDP that's now going through, and specifically for that reason, because we realize that there's certain costs involved, but I think one fundamental issue is very important for other people to get a sense of in terms of the aim of this work is that fundamentally a person, let's say from Arabic region, and they register an Arabic domain name, they should be able to provide their information, their contact information in Arabic. That's the fundamental aim of this whole exercise. The question then, the lower level question then for this group is that whether some kind of transliteration or transformation could assist then in transforming that data back into a form that being current English speaking people in the ICANN world can decipher. So that's kind of what I understand from the group. So one question on that is, which I've always had this question since I was kind of co-chairing the IRD before, is did the group also look into transformation, and this touches on the issue of accuracy, does the group also look into possibility of transforming the data into a form that is readable for people who read English, but doesn't necessarily could be used to send a postal mail back to back to the guy. When you send the postal mail back to the guy, you would use the original form. It's not difficult to cut and paste. But what is important is you somehow need to be able to read it so that you can do customer support or some form of that. So the transformation doesn't need to be a form where it's completely linguistically acceptable, but a form that could customer service or some people can use to a little bit like the A label for the IDN, but not hopefully not as difficult to read or write out. But does the group also look into that kind of like a meta language that's not quite that kind of direction?
Well, thank you, Edmund, for that question. And indeed, we have been discussing this in the group. We have been looking into the issue of are there available in the market translation tools that allow you to translate that contact data into, for your language, readable language, a correct address. And that's a big question mark. Saying that you would like to have a kind of labeling of transforming data, the question then is, who is responsible for transforming that data and the impact of it? And that's a big question, because that's something that if it's done inside the ICANN constellation, it would be the responsibility of ICANN if it's wrong. So labeling to me seems to be not the correct way of doing this, because we have been looking into, for instance, the International Post Federation that has typical ways of addressing postal addresses. But still, it's a question that you cannot solve by saying we are allowing to have a transformation. Our question was translation and transliteration, not having a solution in between that is transforming data into something that eventually could be helpful to read and understand the address you will find in the WHIS data. But still, it's discussion that we are having in the group. It doesn't help us really to get a solution to all the questions we have. But we think that we are addressing now the point where we will separate and have a clear view on is it a yes or a no. And all the other smaller questions will be taken care of once we have taken that decision. I think that's the first step to go through. If we can continue having these discussions for ages, but that doesn't help us. We need to have an answer to the first question, is it desirable, yes or no? Once we have that, we can address the other issues and find ways to propose solutions. But we need first the first question to be answered.
We're going to have to bring it to a last word to James. We're already running 15 minutes behind schedule, and we've got our ESAC colleagues waiting to talk with us. James.
Thanks, Jonathan. I'll be very brief, mindful of the schedule. First, to the point of accuracy, registrants give us their contact information in the language that those contacts exist. If we are, or whomever, is asked to translate them without the registrants providing that information, then you're asking us to guess. And then that the translation errors would then fall onto whoever is doing that. Second point, regarding costs. These costs are already occurring. They're occurring on an ad hoc basis, not for millions of domain names, but just the ones that are causing problems, and they're being incurred by the individuals or organizations who seek to consume that information. It is economically inefficient, as well as patently absurd, to suggest that we should centralize all of those costs with one industry and translate the entire database in advance of any of those domain names being the subject of a problem or an investigation. And thirdly, and I'm going to channel Milton Mueller, who I don't believe is here, I haven't seen him anyway, who made, I thought, a very astute comment back in London that we should be wary, even under the best of intentions, we should be wary of attempts or efforts to make WHOIS into a better surveillance tool. So that it can be used as a surveillance mechanism. Regardless of what we believe the right intentions are, we should be aware of that, and we should be wary, and I would suggest even resist those calls, particularly when it's being borne about by this industry. Thanks.
Thanks, Rudy. That got a little bit more complicated and involved than you might have anticipated, but that's great. It was a full discussion, and appreciate all the contributions. Thanks very much. Okay, we're going to hear from and meet with our colleagues from ESAC now. I unfortunately have to excuse myself at this point, so David is going to take over chairing this session, and then Volker thereafter. So apologies publicly to you, Patrick, and Jim. I have something like that. It's just that I'm a little frightened when it comes to security and stability issues.
Do we need to start the recording on that next session?
Just wait for the last one to finish first.
Yeah. Yep, it's ready to go. Okay, so I'd like to welcome our Patrick and Jim from Security and Stability Advisory Committee. You have a brief presentation to go, so hand it over to Patrick.
Thank you very much, and thank you for once again for allowing us to visit you and bring you up to date on what we have been dealing with since the last meeting. Next slide, please. So as you see, the actual presentation material you have got is actually the material that we will use on our public meeting on Thursday, and that's why you see the timing here. Now we have sort of like we got like I think was it 15 or 30 minutes together with you, and you see that this doesn't really fit. Okay, it's like having 45 in shoe size, and you get a pair of 36, and you say please. Do some tango. It doesn't work. So what we will do here is that I will go through quite quickly what ESSEC is for people that are not aware of what we're doing, and then it's up to you on what we should discuss. My guess, given that what we've been discussing earlier, I've been sitting here for like the last hour and a half or 2 hours and listened to what you have been talking about. My guess is that you're interested in what we have been doing with the IANA function stewardship transition, because we have produced a couple of background documents that might be interesting for you, but we'll see. Maybe you're not interested in that topic. Who knows? So, but I want to for you to give an input. Next slide, please. And next slide again. Thank you very much. So we were initiated in 2001 and began operation in 2002. And we do guidance and to not only ICANN board, but also other supporting organizations and advisory committees, staff, and the general community. We base our work on either direct questions from other entities, but also findings that we issues that we find ourselves. We have been working on domain name blocking, we have been working on certificate issues and a few other things. I reach out to you here that in the work that you're doing in GNSO, and I'm working with the people in your leadership, where I have requested quite explicitly that I want you in your PDPs to actually send us questions as early as possible, because it takes us approximately 6 months or something to actually be able to respond thoroughly and detailed on various issues. So if it is the case that you run something, specifically if you do it in your PDP, that you expect ESSEC to actually say something about, let us know. And the more precise question you ask, the easier our work task is. What has happened is that myself and Jim, we were actually reappointed as chairs for another 3-year term a couple of weeks ago. They didn't want to get rid of us, the other ESSEC members, so we are continuing. And we have today 40 members that are appointed by ICANN board for 3-year terms. Next slide, please. So what we have done recently is since London, we have published SAC 67, which is an overview and history of the IANA function. Doesn't contain any recommendations. It's just a description of what IANA is. We actually were ready today, 2 hours ago, ready with the next document, SAC 68, and that's why it's not on the slide, where we have done the same kind of, similar kind of description of the contract between NTIA and ICANN, and I do have some material on that document. It is in the queue of being actually published and made available. You cannot see it yet on the ICANN website, but I will go through the content. A little bit further back in time, we were looking at the namespace collision issues, denial of service attacks using DNS infrastructure, and then some issues on search list processing. The search list processing and namespace collisions might be interesting, because we have the last couple of weeks had a couple of collisions exactly the way we anticipated with some of the new GTLDs. It's kind of interesting for us to see that, yes, not a surprise, but we had a couple of incidents. Things happened exactly as we thought, all of us in the community, not only us in ESSEC. Next slide, please. So the question now is whether you want me to go through the IANA stewardship transition issues, and if I just see some nodding or some, if that is what you want us to do, then I'll just move forward. Any questions so far? Please.
I'm actually more interested in the name collision examples that you caught in the wild. If no one else is, then I'll withdraw.
There's several people interested in name collision. Is that? Yep, quite a lot. Okay, absolutely.
mean, because we were told it could be, I'm just editorializing here, we were told it could be the end of the world, and then we were told it was nothing. It sounds like it's neither of those. It is something, but it's not the end of the world.
Okay, let me explain what happened. I don't have any slides material on that, but let me explain where we are from our perspective. So it was expected, given earlier SAC reports and also the JAS report, by looking at the traffic to the root name servers, we could detect that certain applied for strings were obviously used in the wild, and that implies that when those TLDs were actually allocated and existed in the root zone, they would get positive responses referring to whatever is actually the name server for the domain name question, which means that instead of getting an NX domain, no such domain response from DNS, it would actually get an A record when querying for it. The result of the board made a decision based on the JAS report and advice from ESSAC, that was implemented for the strings that were identified earlier to actually be out in the wild. So, for example, it was requested for some registries to respond with the 127.0.53.53 as the IP address for all queries for those new gTLDs. What happened was that when some of the gTLDs were actually added to the root zone, specifically .prod, P-R-O-D, that actually did create an issue in a couple of organizations that actually were using .prod internally. It created quite great disturbance in their operations, which basically meant that they lost contact with some of their internal systems. It's a combination of using that TLD internally. They used search list processing and other things that, for example, ESSAC wrote in our report that using search list for your internal operation is like not a good thing. But, of course, the problem with namespace collisions, as ESSAC has pointed out, is not that people within our community know that there are new gTLDs. The problem is that we have parties out there that we have not been able to reach out to. So these entities, organizations, were hit. They had to rework their internal systems. When I personally have been contacted by these organizations, I recommended them to use exactly the process that ICANN has been using. And as far as I've seen personally, the processes that ICANN has laid out that were going to be used were used, and we still have we are sitting here. The internet seems to still work. Okay. Whether these issues will actually result in ESSAC having a look at this again, or whether ICANN will do that, is something that is unclear, not decided upon. But anyways, this is where we are.
So just to put a cap on that, the headline is, name collision is real, it happened, we followed the script that was recommended in the ESSAC report, and it was resolved.
What was implemented was not what was in the ESSAC report. What was implemented was what was in the board decision, which is based on primarily the JAS report, because there were some differences between ESSAC and JAS.
I'm sorry, that's correct. The JAS report that's translated. So that's, I mean, that's huge. That's a good win.
I don't want to put any. I just want to be very explicit here and say that, from ESSAC perspective, my perspective, we are not going to say whether this is a good win or not, because, of course, I say we are still sitting here, the lights are still turned on, etc. But for this organization, it was quite significant. So, from their perspective, of course, I think I don't want to put any value judgment in their thinking. But of course, it depends on how you measure. My point is, as far as I know, there have not been any measurement yet by anyone to say whether it was sort of a success or not. I just want to sort of let everyone know that. So I want to stay neutral on evaluation of on a judgment on the situation.
That's fair. I just think it's fascinating that we had an actual real world test of the procedure that was developed. So
that is correct. We had at least two quite large enterprises in the world that were hit quite heavily by a namespace collision. Yes.
So do we have any other requests for topics from the council side or the GNSO side? Or do you have other things you want to carry on and talk to us about?
Yes, I actually would like to go, if you go forward one, okay, sorry, we're on the right slide here. Let me talk a little bit about the IAN, what we have done regarding related to IAN issues. Specifically, as some of the slides is in this document that is not yet published, but it's public. Okay, weird combination. Anyways, so you know the background on that NTIA announced this on March 14, and you have talked about this quite a lot earlier today. Next slide, please. So we have been looking at what is actually meant by IANA, and the first thing we're looking at is identifying that different entities mean different things with the term IANA. And if you move forward one more slide, thank you. So these are some of the various different definitions of IANA that we have found from ESSAC, and because of this, it's quite important when talking about IANA that we instead sort of agree on what we are talking about before we are. There are quite a lot of disagreements on content, which actually are based on a misunderstanding or non-agreement on what is meant by when people use the term IANA. So we have the DNS root zone management that IANA is working with, internet numbers registry management, protocol parameter registries, including the .ARPA TLD, the .INT top-level domain, and a few other things. Next slide, please. So SAC 67 was published on August 15. And it tries to describe the various activities which are defined in the IANA functions contract, and is trying to explain what the IANA function actually is, because it's quite a large number of other things than just domain names. What is also important to know is that SAC 67, and that this fits to SAC 68, which was ready today, is that SAC 67 is talking about what the IANA function is implementing, which is broader than the contract with NTA, between NTA and ICANN. Okay? While SAC 68 is looking at what is really based on the contract itself. Next slide, please. Yes?
That's a good question. It's broader than what is in the contract with the NTA, because it's also doing functions provided by the ITF MOU?
No, because IANA has the ICANN as the IANA functions operator has taken on more tasks than what is in the contract. The ITF protocol parameters are part of the contract.
So essentially voluntarily.
For example, IANA is currently maintaining the time zone database, for example, as one of these things. It's also the case that ICANN has actually requested IANA to take care of IDN parameters, what I think is called... Anyways, it's a registry that IANA is holding for variants and IDN characters, and that is also not in the part of the contract. Let's see. Okay. So what we are also doing in this document is that we're also looking at the role that the... Oh, sorry. This is now the document that we finished today, which actually is not, it's actually named SAC 68. It's the ESSAC report on the IANA functions contract. In this report, we are looking at explicitly the contract itself. That's the first thing. And the second thing is that we are looking at what role NTIA currently plays with respect to the various functions covered by the contract. And of course, to be able to really understand this, you need to also look at SAC 67, the previous document, SAC 67. One of the reasons why we decided that to make this document explicitly is that if we look at the actual contract itself, it's actually, if I remember correctly, 380 pages, and I don't think many people in this room has actually read the contract. We have, okay. So it's actually the case that some of the reasons why we have been looking at this is also that there are some consistency issues, like it always is in a 380-page document or something like that, or 300-something. Next slide, please. So what we are trying to look at is for example, are the various functions which are covered by the contract that IANA is fulfilling, for example, root zone management, internet number registry management, protocol parameters, and then we're looking at who are the involved parties. And also for each one of them, we're looking at what role NTIA has. And what we... So you see here is an example which we have created for some of these things where we're looking at who is actually doing what for each one of the things that are covered by the contract. Next slide, please. So the interesting part has to do with the root zone management, because our finding by investigating the contract is that this is the only place where NTIA actually do have some kind of active role. And the active role that NTIA has is that they are part of the authorization chain, part of the path for authorization for changes in the root zone. So this is the actual root zone management is sort of a triangular relationship between IANA, a functions operator, ICANN, the root zone maintainer, which is VeriSign, and the administrator, which is NTIA. Next slide, please. So that's that document. We are also working on a third document that will be published in not so long time. Actually, we have done quite a lot of progress the last couple of weeks, where we in SAC, compared to these first two documents, where we are trying to describe the situation, where we actually are going to try to make recommendations. And the recommendations will hopefully be something that can be received by the community and applied to the current open RFP that the coordination group for the IANA stewardship transition has issued. Any questions?
I think we'll all look forward to that document.
It is in the queue to be published, SAC 68. I have actually sent a copy to all the SO and AC chairs. So the gentleman that just left the room actually do have a version of the document in his mailbox, and I don't know what principles you have on distributing that. It's up to you on how you do that, but it's absolutely okay to redistribute it.
I do have a question, Patrick. In 67, you talk about functions. In 68, you probably get closer to analyze the institutions, the boxes. And now you say you are going to make recommendations on principles. The principles are going to be about procedures or about the or the boxes. I don't what should we expect in terms of principles for the third document?
Some of the principles we talked about already in London, and they include things, for example, that we in SAC, from a security and stability point of view, we have a couple of postures that we think is important for example, the existence of a policy development process that develops a policy that is handed over to a policy implementer. So that's how we view the, for example, the PDP that is hosted here in GNSO, which is GTLD related. You develop a policy that is then handed over to IANA as the policy implementer. So to be able to ensure that the implementation of the policy by the policy implementer, to make sure that that is stable and robust, there are certain characteristics that should be applied to the design of that system containing policy implementer and policy development process, and also to some degree the policy itself must include certain elements and be written in a certain way. So for example, it is possible to audit the policy implementer. Because the big question is, how is it with the accountability? Okay, And no one really knows unless you can actually measure and come up with SLAs for the policy implementer. How do you know whether the policy implementer is actually doing what they are supposed to do? Well, one, the starting process is actually to have a clear enough policy so you don't disagree on whether the implementer, IANA, has been doing the right thing based on an unclear policy. So those kind of sort of, it sounds like motherhood and apple pie, but we felt from ESSAC that it's pretty important that someone just write these things down as a checklist. Let's put it that way.
And in the process, you might solve the policy versus implementation conundrum forever.
Well, we're not going to solve it, but what we are going to say, hopefully, is to say, you develop a policy. You should try to make clear where, what in the policy are objective and what are subjective decisions, and you have to make sure that you know when you're in the development process of the policy who is going to make what decisions. What is the appeal chain? How do you disagree? How do you handle disagreements, etc.?
Okay, do we have any further questions, particularly on the IANA-related documents? Yep.
Thanks. Steve DelBianco with the BC. And Patrick, you started to touch on the fact there at the end that in analyzing principles, you don't look just at the black letters of what NTIA does, but you think about implications about what could happen. And I think that's very close to what the BC recommended when we came up with about a dozen stress tests, mostly with respect to the ICANN accountability, but four of them were really specifically focused on the IANA naming functions management. So I'll send you a copy of that too as you develop these principles on advisory on that to see if, looking ahead, how would this new structure handle a hypothetical but plausible stress test scenario?
Yeah, that is appreciated. Thank you very much. I would like to give the microphone to Jim Galvin, the vice chair of ESSAC, because he also, another topic that might be interesting to you that you talk about.
Yeah, so actually I think if you go forward a couple of slides, there's a new work item slide, and next again, right there. No, go forward, new work parties, and again. Okay, so right there. I just wanted to call out a particular work item here. I know that the GNSO has a work item in a working group that's in progress here, which is related to something that ESSAC is also going to undertake here. And we're starting this work now. This new GTLDs, the mid-course correction, collisions, timing of next round. So ESSAC is going to undertake to also do a review of the recent GTLD program and this round of launches and such, all the recommendations that have come out over the last couple of years, and a look at the actions that have taken as a result of those recommendations, and put together essentially exactly what we're going to do is still being decided, to be honest with you. But we do want to look at what has happened and then consider if we have a point of view and a perspective to offer to the community about security and stability as it relates to the GTLD program that has occurred. So this will also encompass name collisions again. You know, consider the question of should the actions that we're taking today continue or not continue, and if they should, what are the questions that should be considered as part of making that decision? Just wanted to call that out since, you know, that work is also being undertaken here. So we should just be aware of that with each other. It's also a motivation for, as the GNSO work continues, if you have particular questions, then there's additional opportunity for you to ask particular questions of ESSAC if you would like specific input. You know, send that question over to us and ask for comments about issues as you find them yourselves you want considered. And hopefully we expect that sometime next year, you know, as we charter this work party now ourselves, even that process is only just undertaking, but hopefully we'll have a work product that'll be available to your group before the group finishes, and so the timing should be pretty good in that respect. Thank you.
Do we have any more questions, or should we let Patrick and Jim go? All right, thank you very much. Oh, very informative, as always. Okay, we'll just bring that item to a close. Let me know when the recording's stopped and started. And we'll begin on the next item, which, actually, which order did we put it in? I think
next up is policy and implementation.
Yep. So if we could, I believe this is Marika. Is this you were speaking to PDP improvement, or is it policy and implementation?
Scott and Chuck.
Oh, we're doing policy yeah. improvement. Okay.
That's up next.
I wasn't quite sure how we rearranged the order. In which case, J. Scott and Chuck.
This is J. Scott. I'm taking this one because Chuck has kindly agreed to chair our meeting. So for everyone, you should know we do have a public meeting that will be held on Wednesday afternoon from 4:30 to, I believe it's 6, and I believe it's in Constellation. It's in this room. So you'll know how to get here if you'd like to join us. Most of the committee active members are sitting in this room right now with us. I'm not going to belabor. I'm going to be very quick given the hour of the day. So if we'll just go to the next slide. You have this information, so it's in your deck. Go to the next slide. I just want to quickly tell you where we are. Where we actually are is we had decided that originally worked a work plan where we were going to do several of the charter questions in parallel in subgroups, and then we were going to bring them back. And then because of the level of participation was so high and good from those that are participating, we felt like it was a much more productive exercise to do them linearly together as an entire group rather than have subgroups do them. So that's what we're doing, and it's put us behind our initial schedule. But our target now is to have a report, a draft report ready around February of 2015, I think. So that's what we're hoping to do. So we're now working on several of the final charter questions. They all are sort of interrelated, so we're going to consider them more or less in a bundle, and that is our hope. The one thing I would tell you is each of you, either your SO or your supporting organization or your advisory committee should have received a communication from our group. We have come up with some proposed processes that we would like everyone to take a look at. They're in this deck. I'm not going to go into them, but they're in this deck in the annex. So I would like and call upon each of you to check with your group to see if they've looked at this, if they have it. If not, if you would share this deck and let them look at the two charts we put in there, because what we're trying to do at this point is get a gut check from the community on whether the work we're doing is headed in the right direction. This does not mean this is the only time you'll have to input. You will have a chance to make all formal comments in any sort of comment period. But what we're trying to do is just make sure that we're headed in the right direction so that as we get into the meatier topics, we're not wasting anyone's time. If we've gone off course, we'd like you to tell us now. So if you would all do that for me this week, check in to see if they've gotten this communication from this group. If they not, if you would share those slides with them. It's just two charts for them to look at. It's got some color coding. The orange in the chart is where we're seeking to get some guidance. So if you see orange in the chart, that's what we're wanting you to discuss with us. And any of us, you know, we have a wiki. Anybody can speak to any of us during the week and ask questions, and we can explain. I just don't want to take anyone's time. It's a good group. We're working hard. We're trying to get you something that we think will, it may not solve all the issues, but it will give us a great laboratory to work through finding and refining them into probably a final solution, and I think we're headed in the right direction. Are there any questions? Chuck, do you want to add anything?
I guess I just have a question. Are we going to put the charts up at all for the council?
I wasn't going to because we're so late in the day. Okay. I just think that it's everyone's tired. They're there. They have them. If they have any questions, they can ask you, myself, Cheryl, Alan, Wolf. is on the team as well. I think that, you know, you can reach out to us and we'll be happy to answer any questions. Edmund.
Edmund Chung here. Sorry, I haven't looked at the charts yet, but there's something that they came out in a recent while that I think might be useful for this group to consider as well. We talk about policy and implementation, and more I'm finding that there is a difference between policy and implementation, and then there's also a difference between implementation and execution. Right? What I want to try to explain that a little bit more. The policy, you know, that the GNSO creates, you know, we create a document. And then, for example, the AGB, that creates an implementation plan. Their, you know, staff creates an implementation plan. And then another group within staff to actually execute it. And there are some differences between those two as well. How do we capture, do we even try to capture it within some of the discussion here?
Funny you should ask. Staff has been developing a process whereby they are looking over at a more effectual way to transition from policy to the actual execution to the GDD. And we have been involved with the staff that is drafting that policy, and we have reviewed it, we have discussed it, we've refined it, so that we're making sure that what we're developing will slot in with that as well. So we are taking a holistic look at all of that, and staff is focusing on this. They have a process, but they are refining that process and hopefully working out some of the glitches that they've had in the past. And it's a lot more bright line, I would say, in my history between the policy and the implementation within an execution standpoint, development and execution. It's been muddied in the past, but I think now it's a lot brighter line, and they're really working hard to get that put together.
But I guess that the real point is you know, we create the documents for policy, and then, you know, it goes into implementation process and stuff. Usually, you know, for certain things, there's an implementation plan. That's not quite considered policy already. You know, like the AGB itself, that's a good big example, right? The AGB itself is not policy, it's implementation. And then the interpretation of that document to what is actually being done, there's also a discrepancy or different ways of interpreting it as well, I guess.
Yeah. We spent an awful lot of time talking about that stuff. And all, the title of the work group is still Policy and Implementation. However, we have some principles, and the principles say that if the stakeholders are going to be impacted by a decision, regardless of when that decision is taken, the GNSO must be involved in the process. So in the extreme case, we're halfway through implementation, we said, oh my gee, we forgot all about this, or the what we have to do to implement, we have some real decisions to make. We have to come back at that point. And we're looking at a variety of fast path and other mechanisms by which that decision can be made, involving the stakeholders, involving the community, without severely impeding the implementation, although it may slow it down somewhat because we blew it, we forgot something that was really important. Doesn't matter what phase it's in. If it impacts people, we gotta think about it from a stakeholder point of view.
Marika.
And just to add, this is Marika, just to add to the comments, that the framework is already, you know, publicly available on the wiki as well. So if you want to have a look at how it outlines the different stages of the implementation process, but it's probably also something that will be included in the initial report, as you know, it is part of this overall discussion. So if there are any further comments that people may have, you know, I think staff is looking forward to receiving those and addressing those as we can.
Chuck Gomes, just to add a little bit to that, and the group that we've been consulting with on this framework that Marika just referred to is the GDD, because they're responsible for implementation. So we're working every day with the policy staff. They're here. But we've also, in the last, I guess, about a month, we've been working on this framework with GDD staff. So it's not just restricted to policy staff.
All right. I think that's it.
Okay.
Thanks.
Just the one thing I'd add is just to let you know that your working group is mentioned in council discussions earlier today when it the SCI that talks about council procedure discussed the issue of revisiting GNSO policy, and it was mentioned that there will be really, you know, there's already that process is already being discussed. So we will no doubt we may end up talking to you in the SCI as well. So.
Well, I would say the SCI, I would encourage you to show them the charts that we've put together that are in the annex to the PowerPoint you have before you, and I think you've received, and look at that and give us your feedback.
So do we have any further questions for the Policy Implementation Working Group? Who I think have mostly just given us some work to do, which is great. In that case, I thank J. Scott and Chuck very much for... All right, so that closes the session. We've got 20 minutes and one more item to go, which I believe is the... Yes, the GNSO PDP improvements. Let us know when we're ready. We've stopped recording, ready to start the new... ready to go. GNSO PDP improvements, and Marika, I believe you were speaking to that one.
Yep. So this is Marika. This is basically a continuation from the efforts on GNSO PDP improvements, which I think we started quite a while back already, and we had our first, I think, formal update in London. So this is basically the second formal update on where we stand on the 10 proposed improvements that I think are linked here to the document that try to address some of the things where we're looking at streamlining and enhancing the effectiveness of some of the steps in the PDP process, as well as participation and engagement of community volunteers. So basically, we tasked staff to look at some of those items and moving forward on some of the implementation of those efforts, which several of those are actually conducted in a pilot form, the whole idea being that we're trying to test out some of these ideas and actually trying to see if, do they have any effect? Do we think they're useful? And should we maybe formalize them by incorporating them in operating procedures, or they're really not working, so let's not continue doing those. If you could go to the next slide, please. So the first one is the inclusion of a proposed charter as part of the preliminary issue report. Basically, the way we currently run it is that after a final report, a final issue report is provided, a drafting team gets together, works on the charter, and typically some time can go over that because you need to have a call for volunteers from the drafting team. They need to start meeting. And in most cases, the charter is to a large extent based on what is in the issue report. So one of the ideas was, should we actually look at including a proposed charter as part of the preliminary issue report that's put out for public comment, so everyone has an opportunity to look at that, provide input, staff can then make changes or modifications to that charter and submit that then together with the final issue report to the council for consideration, so that they have so that you have the option to initiate the PDP and adopt the charter at the same time. But at the same time, it's always as well, you have the option to ignore or discard that charter and form a drafting team and have a separate effort looking at that. So to date, we actually only had one effort where we did it as part of this initiative for the curative rights PDP. And with regard to that effort, we actually had, I think, 20 days between the initiation of the PDP and adoption of the charter. So it was a relatively short time frame, and it was based indeed on the charter that we had as part of the initial, the preliminary issue report. Although I think there were a couple of tweaks that were made based on discussions at the council level. But of course, there was only one effort so far. It's too early to draw conclusions on the basis of that. And we would suggest that for any future PDPs, we follow that same model so that at some point we have an idea of whether that is indeed really helping the process or not. And then again, at some point we then need to consider, is it something that needs to be formalized in the GNSO operating procedures, or can we just leave it as an option as we currently have? you know, some of the feedback we did receive last time was that we do need to make sure that the charter is submitted separately to the council as part of the final issue report, or to make sure that you have an opportunity to review that separately and also specifically call it out as part of the public comment forum so that people are aware that there is a draft charter included as part of the preliminary issue report and that specific input is sought on that. Go to the next slide. Intensity of PDP working group meetings, basically looking at some ideas on how to maybe speed up some of the work that's undergoing, but recognizing as well that you know, increasing intensity may not always be the answer because it does require more time from volunteers and participants. And as well, you know, with the current workload, it may not always be an option. I think several of you participated actually in the effort that we had ongoing here yesterday, which is a pilot project for face-to-face facilitated PDP working group meetings that was approved by the ICANN board as part of the special budget requests, in which we're basically trying to pilot and try out, you know, does it have an effect on a PDP if you actually get people into a room? And on top of that, if you actually have, you know, a professional facilitator helping the effort. So I said this is a pilot project. We had, you know, the first meeting here. We're planning to have a second one in Marrakesh. And I said here, we're trying to look a bit, you know, from a staff perspective, where are different groups, you know, in the relevant stages of their process. And you know, from our perspective, we think that maybe the PDP on curative rights would be a good candidate to have that face-to-face meeting at ICANN 52. So we would like to get your input there if that's something you think is you support. Are there any other PDPs that you think, you know, are maybe at a better stage to benefit from that meeting? We would know that I think if we don't get any other suggestions or objections to moving forward with this, we would start planning that because we have received feedback as well from, you know, some of the participants yesterday that the sooner they know, you know, the better, because people do need to plan their travel. And for this meeting, we'll need to look whether it's, you know, the day before or the day after. So if you have any thoughts about that, you know, feel free to raise them now or throughout the meeting, or think about which effort you think is best qualified to, you know, benefit from that face-to-face time. But as I said, we'll be looking at probably the curative rights PDP because they are probably at a stage by then that they could really maybe benefit from that face-to-face time. Next slide. So increasing the pool of PDP working group volunteers, and there are several efforts that we've been implementing in that regard. We have monthly open house newcomer working group webinars that are co-hosted with a number of council members. So I want to thank Avery, James, and Thomas have been serving as hosts on those webinars. And I think, you know, at least the feedback we've received from people that have participated in that, it's really, really helpful. It's basically for anyone interested to come along. It's we run through some of the basics of, you know, PDP working groups, but you know, the main reason for the session is for anyone to ask any questions they may have about what it takes to be involved in a PDP working group, you know, to learn from people that are doing that on a, you know, almost daily basis. And we've actually seen, I think it started off relatively slowly because we would have one, two, three people, but recently actually have seen RSVPs increase threefold. So we believe that is a good sign, and people do see the use of this you know, benefit from participation. We're also working on the implementation of a PDP working group member onboarding program, and we'll get to that as well in the recommendation 5, and Lars will talk a little bit about that. And we're also exploring other tools that may facilitate, you know, the sign-up of new members, you know, because now people have to go through the secretariat, you know, get emails, look for information to see if there are ways to streamline that process and maybe automate part of those functions and make it easier as well for people to obtain information and find their way around. Go to the next slide. And this was one where we were looking at, you know, requiring working group representative from each SGC and SOAC. We haven't really discussed this further. We said we would look at data and see how the recent makeup of working groups is. You know, do we still have an issue where certain groups are underrepresented? I do believe, and it's not scientifically examined, but that I think we do have better representation from the different groups on the different working groups. I think a lot of stakeholder groups and constituencies are making a real effort to either at least have one person in that group that then briefs others in their community on the effort and keeping each other up to date. But again, it's something we, you know, people do believe it's still a concern that we could explore further. The GAC GNSO consultation group is exploring mechanisms for early engagement of the GAC. I think you'll hear more about that as well tomorrow, so hopefully there will be mechanisms as well to engage the GAC at an earlier stage and obtain their input. And something that we implemented following some suggestions and ideas and during the London meeting is the option for interested parties to join as a mailing list observer. Basically, two objectives there. For one, we believe it will lower the barrier for participation. You can just, you know, watch a little bit for a while until you feel comfortable to actually join as a full member. But it also ensures that those that sign up as a member are really the ones that want to do work. So you can make a realistic assessment of who's there to do the work and who's there to listen, which, no, it's fair enough to want to be following conversations, but you may not have the time to actually do so. And I think so far it has been quite successful. We, for the new GTLD discussion group, I think we have over 30 observers in that group. I think Curative Rights is a smaller group, but we have four observers as well. But we're hoping that that will allow as well for a better breakdown between people that either want to learn or also, you know, those that just don't have the time to actively participate, so that, you know, the chair or whoever supporting the group can make an assessment. Do we have enough people there to actually do and undertake the work? So again, I think we're interested as well to hear what your experiences are. I'm sure some of you are probably signed up as an observer to certain efforts. So I think for now we'll just continue with that. And one of the improvements we already made is as well to, I think we're going to change the terminology, because I think in some of the calls for volunteers we've been using the term observer, but I think for some people it wasn't clear what that actually meant. So I think we're trying to implement the term mailing list observer to really make clear what it actually entails. Go to the next slide. So improved online tools and training. What we also implemented after London, and I think they're also interested to hear from all of you. I see some person that's really happy about that, and that's Cheryl, is a calendar invites to facilitate attendance. So in addition to sending out the call details, it now has a little attachment that you can click and open and then automatically save it in your calendar. So you get, you know, a pop-up reminding you that a call is starting and has all the details. And I think we'll continue because I see that Cheryl is very happy, so that makes us happy. So so that's something we're again implementing to try to facilitate participation for working group participants. Just hand over to Lars to maybe say a little bit about the onboarding program that we're working on and implementing.
Thanks, Marika. Yes, together with Mary, actually, it's not just my effort. We're trying to build a little bit on what's being done on the learn.icann.org website. I don't know if you had a chance to look at that. So we would like to produce a couple of presentations. Both Mary and I have some background in teaching. And so the idea is to have maybe, depending on what the colleagues in the ICANN Learn department can help us with, have some basic videos and presentations with voiceovers. There's some topics here on the slide that you can see, such as how is the GNSO structured, what is consensus policy, how does the PDP work. There's other issues as well that we thought about that could be useful. You know, who are the different ICANN SOs and ACs? I personally joined the staff only a year and a half ago, and I didn't know what a registrar was. I didn't come from, you know, within the ICANN world. I knew nothing, and so I think for this particular project, it's a big benefit. I think it's sometimes quite easy to get lost in you know, the acronyms and the what is a very complicated structure. And so I think what we're both trying to do is to boil it down to a few important issues and subjects that you need to know about if you want to join this community and to contribute actively. And we have also in mind that it's maybe some of these issues might be also refreshers for people who are part of the community and are maybe just in one specific corner and like to broaden their horizon. So if you have any questions or suggestions, very welcome to contribute. Watch the space. We'll be starting off with a small subject area, put this out there and see what the feedback is and then build on that.
Go to the next slide. PDP working repertoire, we haven't really paid any attention to that. It's something we may want to explore further post Los Angeles, but it's the idea of, instead of having the kind of joint writing effort on initial reports, should we maybe explore having a kind of repertoire that for example, at the start of the process, we do the rounds, talk to everyone, and on the basis of that, would draft some initial recommendations or initial report that then, you know, the group could further look at. We haven't really explored it further at this stage. Next slide. Professional moderation and facilitation and involvement of experts. I already mentioned the facilitation that we had yesterday, although our professional facilitator got ill, so we didn't really have a chance to benefit. But we had, you know, Thomas serving there, maybe not as a professional facilitator, but he did it very professionally. So that was really good.
He almost died twice.
Yeah, although he almost died twice doing it, but fortunately he's still here with us. This is about a continuation of the community leadership training, and I think several of you participated at and this time around. So another opportunity to enhance people's skills and build on that. And again, you know, we need to review as well the facilitated PDP working group meetings, and based on that, explore further options or you know, if there are other recommendations of what we should be looking at, we should take care of that. Next slide. Organize workshops and discussions at the outset. I think this is something, just a standing item to really encourage people if there are certain issues that they would like to see for policy consideration, you know, really consider having first a workshop or a discussion around it before you immediately launch into a request for an issue report, to really make sure, you know, people understand what the issues is, you know, gather as much information as you can and really try to decide whether indeed is a PDP the appropriate route to go, or are there other options for addressing the issue. Go to the next slide. A better data metrics. You already heard today about the efforts that are going on in data metrics for policymaking working group. And I think from our side, we're also trying to gather some data that may help inform this effort. Now, are some of these initiatives having an effect? You know, do more people show up for conference calls? Now we actually send them invites. You know, do we get more people joining working groups now that there's, you know, they can also join as an observer? I think we're trying as well to see if we can track that and help inform this discussion as well. Next slide. I think that's basically the end. There was also the explore flexibility in relation to the public comment forum duration. I think there was a communication that actually went out around London time, and I think this was initially planned to have happened already before, but I think now it's scheduled to happen shortly after Los Angeles. So the idea is for you to review after that has been implemented to see if that indeed meets your concerns, and you know, determine if this is an area that you need to undertake any further action on, or if there are any further changes that are needed. I think that's so. Next steps. Now, any input you have on these issues or any ideas you may have, you know, please bring them forward. I think again, this is really kind of pilot project approach. We're trying to see, you know, what things may help, what things may work, really aimed at, you know, how can we make PDP more efficient and effective, and also engage as many people as we can in those efforts. So we'll continue with, you know, some of the things we mentioned here, and then we hope to provide you with the next update in Marrakesh.
Thomas?
Yeah, two quick points. First one on the newcomer sessions, which I could also help hosting. I think these are excellent events. You know, the slide deck that's prepared for that and so on, so is great. The turnout is not particularly overwhelming, I should say. And I think we should try find mechanisms to bring this to the attention of a broader audience, how much fun GNSO working group work actually is. So maybe you guys could talk to the people that are managing ICANN's newsletters or ICANN's website. Maybe we can get this posted on the main page more visibly, so that more people are being attracted. And secondly, on the face-to-face working group meeting pilot that I was privileged to witness yesterday. You know, I studied law because I can deal with words better than with numbers. But if we assume that for a call that you have per week, you know, out of a 1 hour call, you know, you wait for four or five minutes until everybody is there. Then you do a roll call, then you do a little recap of what happened during the previous calls. I would be surprised if you had substantial work going on for more than 45 minutes. So I think that with the day yesterday, we have been as good as, if not even more productive than 2 months of working group work remotely. And I think, you know, we have to wait for you guys to look at the evaluation forms. But if the participants thought this was a worthwhile effort, I would like to encourage you to compare the costs of 8 calls worldwide versus the cost of a face-to-face meeting. And I think if that doesn't differ too much, and if you take the non-tangible benefit of PDPs coming to a close earlier into the equation, then I think maybe that's something that we should build into this as a routine.
Carlos?
I think I was one of the participants in these newcomers where 2 people showed up, but you just criticized the 1-hour format, so don't put the newcomers into the 1-hour format because it looks like any other call. That is just a comment because I thought it was very good. I remember you made the introduction and you made a presentation, Thomas. It was before London and it was an excellent experience for me, the newcomers. And the second comment, I see a line connected between the words facilitator and rapporteur and face-to-face and workshop. There is and the mind maps that Steve started trying. So I see obviously a clear need for some standard methodology on how to proceed. So a workshop just on that issue, trying to connect rapporteur and facilitator and workshop would be worthwhile. I don't know if there is time left this Friday for this kind of feedback or not, but it's certainly necessary to put them together. I think it was an excellent list of comments, but some of them can be grouped. Thank you.
Do we have any other comments? Yep.
Just briefly, and Cheryl, for the record, and very much as a work group participant in no other capacity, I think the what sounds like very successful pilot is incredibly important, and I certainly agree with what you just said, Thomas, because it is, if you do that cost-benefit analysis, I think it'll be very interesting. But I would also always want to make the case for still having effective remote participation with these face-to-face efforts. You still can't disenfranchise because you cannot travel, and people can put even a 4-hour block into a 7 or 6 hour day and but still not be able to travel, but they could do that remotely. So I just wanted to keep that on the agenda as well.
Avery, do you want to?
Yep. And responding to Cheryl, because indeed we did have remote participation, and actually the way we structured the meeting, because initially we were talking about should we have breakout groups and, you know, flip charts, and I think we made a conscious decision to say no, because we do have people that will be participating remotely, and for some it was in the middle of the night because we have several people in different time zones, but they were very committed and indeed, you know, providing comments, and then we also had, of course, the phone bridge. So we definitely did factor that in, and of course it's not the same as being in the room, but I think, you know, we did do our best, and at least I think the people that were participating and at least appreciated the opportunity to provide input. And also, of course, important to know that anything coming out of such efforts does go back to the full working group, recognizing that not everyone may be there or have a chance to, you know, see the whole day. So I think that was a common understanding as well, that everything that came out of that meeting will now go back to the full working group to really make sure that it fits with everyone.
The remote participation, because in fact the biggest barrier to participation in the face-to-face actually, one of the biggest barriers turned out to be in-person participation in other ICANN events that were held on the same day. Avery.
Yeah, a couple things. One, I have a question on the phone calls that we do. Those. Is there any measurement? Do people ever go and listen to them after? I'd be curious to hear that, because there is a number of people that have said, oh, we don't understand it at all. Oh, well, you should come to those calls. Oh, yeah, and they don't. So, I mean, I'm really curious about that. On the other thing, I would also think of looking at other kinds of experiments other than the full day, looking at the time economics that Thomas is mentioning, in terms of using some of those other tools that allow people to see each other but still be remote, you know, the WebExes and such as that. And I know that when those things happen, for some people, it's the middle of the night. But you just have to explain to them that it's just jet lag without spending any time in a plane. And you know, it's better than traveling. And I think so. I'm not trying to dissuade from having these sessions. They're good. But while looking at experiments, the 3 hour with a break and then perhaps another 3 hours, you know, using a tool that allows you to see faces. So the WebEx kind of tools where you actually are more interacting might also be a worthwhile experiment.
Yes, Marika.
Yes, it is, Marika. I think on the downloads, it's a very good point, and I think it is something that we can probably get access to that information. So we'll check that, because I think we do refer people, you know, to them, and we send them out afterwards as well. And similarly on the other one, because I think Adobe Connect also has the webcam option. We just never use it because... You know, indeed. Indeed, most people may not want to, you know, is it in the middle of the night? But I think the option does exist, so maybe it is something to explore, and I don't know actually how it works in practice. So if someone's speaking, then you see them, or they can choose to be seen. So it may be something that, you know, we can experiment with.
And also the only sort of asynchronous tools we really use are internet and wikis, which there's bound to be some interesting things to look at out there. Do we have any more questions for Marika? I think we seem to be out. Well, I've just got to say, I think that was a really good, you know, really useful update. It reminds us just how much that the staff actually are doing to try and improve this. When you sort of put it all together, it really is quite a lot. And I definitely found the participation in the face-to-face trial to be really useful. So I'll thank Marika very much for that report. It was really helpful. And that being the last item of the day, we will... that being the last item of the day, we'll close that one. Volker wants to say something.
Okay, we can stop the recording. Now the official part is over, and I would just like to invite Brett to... direct his words to the counselor to the counselors regarding the after meeting entertainment.
Thank you. I've organized a